This is the CSIS Global Health Interview Series at www.smartglobalhealth.org.
We're here today with Richard Downey, a fellow with the CSIS Africa program and co-author with Jennifer Cook of the CSIS Food Security Report, African Perspectives on Genetically Modified Crops, Assessing the Debate in Zambia, Kenya, and South Africa. Richard joined CSIS after a decade-long career in journalism, much of it spent at the BBC, where he worked as a senior broadcast journalist covering the leading international stories of the day for radio. He's also worked with the Council on Foreign Relations and the U.S. Institute of Peace. Richard, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
So to get us started on your report, the Green Revolution of the late 1960s and 1970s resulted in a dramatic increase in agricultural productivity across much of the world, particularly in Asia and Latin America. And yet you begin your report by noting that the Green Revolution largely passed unnoticed by Africa. What do you mean by this?
Well, as you say, the agricultural revolution was all about harnessing science and scientific techniques and applying them to farming to increase productivity. Now, this happened all over the world, and with the exception, really, of Africa, where you just didn't get the kind of investment in agricultural science that you'd seen in other continents. I'll just throw a couple of figures at you to illustrate. In the past 20 years, Africa has only increased its investment in agricultural research by 20%. Now, that's compared with a threefold increase in Asia. Another thing worth pointing out, you just don't have the widespread use of improved seed varieties in Africa. So the result of all this is that average crop yields in Africa are less than one-third of those in Asia, for example. And this is for two continents which kind of started roughly the same basic level back in the 1960s. Now, of course, there are other factors which explain why Africa still suffers from food insecurity, you know, things like poor soil and lack of water and investments and the effects of international trade. But, you know, these things are all important, but I would highlight the lack of investment in science as being the really crucial one.
And so boosting agricultural productivity through the use of genetically modified organisms, GMOs, is a fiercely debated issue even before you look at it from the African perspective. Who are the main players in this debate, and why is it so hotly contested?
Well, I think what you tend to find in Africa, and that's one of the reasons why we originally took up this study, is that the opinions of people in Africa on GMOs tend to get drowned out in this sort of wider transatlantic debate. So to simplify things a little bit, you have this tend to have a pro-GMO lobby in the United States, and that's kind of buttressed by a government position that's quite pro-GMO, and backed by the big biotech companies, you know, the likes of Monsanto and so on. Then on the other hand, on the other side of the Atlantic, you have a vocal anti-GMO lobby in Europe, led by NGOs and spurred by sort of elements of the media as well. And it said, you know, which says that the safety of GMOs can't be proven, and that, you know, GMOs put the interests of big business over small farmers and so on. We've heard all the debates before. But in the middle of this vocal debate, you have Africans being pushed one way and pulled the other. And what tends to happen is that African countries have tended to follow the European lead and taken an anti-GMO position. Now, there's a simple reason for this. The European Union is the biggest market for African produce. So if consumers in Europe are demanding food that's GM-free, then African farmers have to follow or risk losing out on their main market. So really, the debate has been dominated by US and North America on one side, Europe on the other, Africans caught in the middle.
And your report attempts to place this debate within the African context by looking at three countries, Zambia, Kenya, and South Africa, and you say at different stages along the thought process on GMOs. Where do these countries currently stand on the issue, and what is needed to resolve the debate?
Right, well, the three countries we chose are, as you say, they're at different stages on their journey on GMO and thinking about it. First, South Africa, which in many ways is the odd man out in Africa. It's been growing GMO crops commercially for a decade or more now. That's really because it's had this historically well-developed scientific community, which kind of early on realized the potential of GMO technology and ran with it. The main issues in South Africa are kind of slightly different to elsewhere in Africa. They're really about how you regulate the industry. The government in South Africa is officially supportive of GMOs and biotechnology, but there's still a lot of confusion among lawmakers about the technology and how you regulate it. And all of these discussions kind of get bogged down in a lot of delay and confusion. That makes the scientists very unhappy because they feel their research is being held back. Also, the opponents of GMO think they're being drowned out, their opinions, and that the government is too supportive of GMOs. In Kenya, movement on GMOs has been more recent, but quite rapid, actually, in some ways. And to some extent, the enabling environment on GM technology is almost rivaling that of South Africa. You have a biosafety law in place quite recently, and it's quite a forward-thinking, forward-leaning role. I'll start that sentence again. So you have a biotechnology law in place that's quite forward-leaning. And although there's no commercial GM technology on the market yet, it's probably not that far off now. So in some ways, like in South Africa, scientists have led the way and the regulatory framework has sort of followed in its wake. Now, that's a very different situation than in Zambia, where the government took a firm line against GMOs and put the research on hold until a kind of comprehensive series of laws were put in place to govern the use of biotechnology. And those laws really are very strict and in many ways seem designed to make sure Zambia remains GM-free. So the prevailing sense in Zambia, in contrast perhaps to Kenya and South Africa, is that there really are easier, cheaper and better ways of helping African farmers rather than getting them to grow GM crops.
Your conversations in these three countries, among both those who favor the use of GMOs and those who oppose them, resulted in a few broad observations about what is needed to move the conversation forward. What do you think would be helpful?
Well, two things came up that kind of stick in my mind and are common across the three countries. That's that in all three countries, there's a very lively debate going on about the pros and cons of GMOs. But this debate generally is conducted within a very small a circle of people. The vast majority of people don't know anything about GMOs and the complex science behind them. So they're kind of susceptible to misinformation. That's no different, I might add, to other countries in the world as well. It's not just an African problem. But I think what came across strongly is that it's really important to get public information programs up and running early on. And information campaigns that are trusted by both sides of the divide, and that present the facts in a sort of independent way, rather than trying to persuade people one way or the other. The other point we wanted to get across is that the GMO issue in a way illustrates a much wider problem, and that's the problem of the lack of scientific capacity in Africa. You don't have enough research institutions, trained scientists, labs and universities and knowledge out there on science. And because of that, you don't have enough innovation, people coming up with products that are relevant and useful to Africans as well, most importantly.
So what does all this mean for the United States? I mean, where do policymakers go? Where do the corporate individuals go? What does this mean?
Well, I think in many ways the United States has to be kind of humble in the way it approaches this issue and to be quite careful about not being seen as pushing a position on GMOs and being too pro-GMO. I think it's really important that Africans are sort of left alone to work through these issues by themselves and without outside interference. What the United States can do, I think, is sort of help the process more indirectly from the sidelines, and that's by investing in science in general in Africa, so that you have more trained African scientists, and then African scientists helping to generate a more informed debate. And that's not just on GMOs, but other complicated science and technology issues as well. One thing the US used to do and actually stopped doing to a large extent, and I think should be doing more of, is investing more in university scholarships for African students. I think that would make a big difference in the long term.
Great, Richard. Thank you so much for joining us. Interested listeners can download the full report by Richard Downey and Jennifer Cook at csis.org.